we finished up with the paragraph that started, "Hero Shariputra, all dharmas are marked with emptiness. They are not produced or stopped, defiled or immaculate, deficient or complete." And we explored the other dharma with that to understand what it was getting at. And it goes on today, from what we studied yesterday, to saying, "Therefore, in emptiness, there is no form, nor feeling, nor perception, nor impulse, nor consciousness. No eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind. No forms, sounds, smells, tastes, touchables, or objects of mind. No sight organ element, and so forth, until we come to no mind consciousness element." Okay, so these are usually known as the 18 dhatus. Eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind, the five senses and the mind sense. No forms, sounds, smells, tastes, touchables, or objects of mind. Then we've got, in this lot, we've actually got the five skandhas, the six senses, and the element that arises when sense organ contacts sense object. That's the element that arises when is the mind consciousness element. So it's saying that none of them ultimately exist. Actually, it's not quite saying that. It's saying because they're marked with emptiness, they can have no other mark. So they're marked as eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind. But that is simply a conventional verbal designation, the mark. And if they're marked with emptiness, they can't have that mark. Because ultimately, the eye, ear, nose, the 18 dhatus don't come into substantial existence. We went into this fairly detailed yesterday. So, any problems with the bare statement of that?
You just said that they do not ultimately exist. You can qualify yourself by saying it's not quite that they don't ultimately exist, it's that they're marked with emptiness. Can you just expand that a little bit more?
It's not saying really that they don't exist conventionally.
Yeah, so the ultimate existence is what you are.
Yes. They can't have a mark, any other mark than emptiness. Yesterday we decided that if anything was marked with emptiness, it couldn't have another mark.
Yes.
And everything's marked with emptiness.
Everything's marked with emptiness. So that's really what it's saying, that those marks are merely conventional designations, which aren't ultimately real. Conventionally real, but not ultimately real.
So to say that something is marked, is that means that it has the characteristic of? Is that what it means?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. I mean, we're saying emptiness is a mark. It's, in a way, it's a designation, a label.
Yeah, which is what you stick on say it. As well, that actually emptiness is empty as well.
That's right. We'll come to that. So the sutra is telling us that there are no skandhas, no sense organs, no sense objects, and no element of consciousness arises when the sense organ contacts sense object. And this covers the entire range of our conditioned experience. There's nothing excluded in that. There's nothing outside that experience. So it's saying everything is empty. So all it's leaving you with is that flow of phenomena. It's emphasizing that Dharma is marked with emptiness, it just can't have no other mark. It cannot be a substantial entity.
I just clarify, see, to me, my understanding of the word Dharma is a phenomenon. Is that
Well, yes, that's right. Only it's, in this case, it's because they analyzed the skandhas to try and find the ultimate, the existing elements. Those are the dharmas.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean that everything in the five skandhas are dharmas. These are all mental events. They're not, as I said yesterday, I mean, a dharma isn't a chair or a dog or a television. Or,
yeah.
It's a mental event.
But these actually refer to these 72 conditioned and 3 unconditioned.
That's right. There are 75 dharmas, according to the Sarvastivadin Abhidharma. But, I mean, we're saying, it's saying here nothing, you know, on the face of it, it looks as if nothing exists, but we'll have to remember that we need to be careful that this isn't nihilistic. You know, they do exist in our experience. They're conventionally real. Now, we've got a nose, we've got eyes, we couldn't function without those conventional organs, senses, etc. But they only exist. They're only conventionally real. Because ultimately, they're insubstantial. They're only a flow of phenomena. Have we any problems with this at all? I mean, we did sort of go into this in detail a bit yesterday. Huh? We need to be, it's something we need to really be clear with, you know. Fairly succinct phrase that the Buddha used, that this being that becomes, from the arising of this that arises, this not being that does not become, from the ceasing of this that ceases. Anyway, that's it in a nutshell, really.
Can I just ask, is it an oversimplification or an over intellectualization to look at something? And say, for example, a tree, and break it down to function in parts of a tree. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, a tree's got organs, really, an other animal, for, you know, taking up water, nutrients, you know, photosynthesis, etc. Would you see that as an oversimplification if, you know, if I'm contemplating emptiness, and I look at a tree, and I think, okay, that's a tree, but in that tree, there's constant movement, constant change, constant cell replication and cell death. And
well, that's right. You're seeing the tree as a process. But,
yeah.
I mean, you can look at a tree and think, well, it started, say, as a seed.
Mm.
But is a seed a tree?
No.
A seed is a condition. But the seed needs warmth, it needs soil, it needs sun, it needs earth, it needs nutrients, it needs all the things. And it germinates, and what have we got then? Is that a tree? As soon as it germinates? No. So you've got all the conditions that are necessary from that first, well, even before the seed, right through till you come to you're looking at it as a process of sap that's flowing, or that it's in effect a process, a living sort of process of change. It's like examining our own body as we did for the first, our own form as the first reflection. A tree, you can do the same with the tree just. Or you can look at it as its, in its parts, its branches, its leaves, its bark, its sap, its everything.
Mm.
It's compounded. And you could never ultimately come to an irreducible part of that tree.
Mm.
And that applies to everything. So we go on from there to, there is no ignorance, no extinction of ignorance, and so forth, until we come to there's no decay and death, no extinction of decay and death. Now, I'm sure most of you recognize the 12 Nidanas are in that phrase there. I've given you that handout for the 12 Nidanas. And I want to look at this in what it's saying here, in sort of two different ways. So when you refer to the 12 Nidana tradition, it starts with ignorance and goes right through to the decay and death. But it's saying there is no ignorance, no extinction of ignorance, and so forth, until we come to there's no decay and death, no extinction of decay and death. Okay? Now, if we go back to what the things we've looked at before, there would appear on the face of it to be contradictions in some of the statements that have been made. And the very first day we found that Hiroshariputra, form is emptiness and the very emptiness is form. Emptiness does not differ from form, form does not differ from emptiness. Whatever is form, that is emptiness. Whatever is emptiness, that is form. Then we came to the statement that I read out first there that said, in emptiness there is no form. I mean, that is illogical, isn't it, in a way? First of all, it's saying emptiness is form, and then it's saying in emptiness there is no form. And now it's saying there is no ignorance, no extinction of ignorance, and so forth until we come to no decay and death. No extinction of decay and death. But if you look in the 12 Nidanas, included in the so forth is their name and form. We're talking about form. There is no form, but no extinction of form. Again, that's quite different to, first of all, saying emptiness is form, and then saying in emptiness there is no form. Now it's saying there's no form, but there's no form. So, what is it getting at here? Well, on the first day when we studied it, we saw really that that first statement, ultimately that the real meaning of it we got from it was that there is no separation between form and emptiness. The emptiness, you can't have emptiness without the form, obviously. The form is empty, so you can't have the emptiness without the form. But you can't have form as we experience it conventionally without the emptiness. I mean, if it wasn't empty, it would be something fixed, substantial, inherent. It would have inherent existence. So what it's really saying in the first place is there's just no separation between form and emptiness. They're not two separate things. They're not entities in themselves, okay? And the second statement that we looked at this morning, where it says, in emptiness, there is no form. To see there that what it's saying, because it's marked with emptiness, it ultimately doesn't come into existence. You can't put the mark on it. If it's marked with emptiness, it can't have any other mark. You can't mark it with form if it's marked with emptiness, it's saying, because ultimately it doesn't come into existence. But now it's saying, in a way, there's no form, but no extinction of form. So it's saying it neither exists or that it doesn't exist. And it's saying this in the context of the 12 Nidanas, right? The fundamental insight of the Buddha was this conditionality, and this was his main formulation of it. Of conditionality, that everything arises in dependence upon conditions. So what it's now pointing out to us is simply saying that there's only this pratityasamutpada, because there's no form, but there's no extinction of form. So, normally, before we started looking at this, or before we thought about emptiness at all, our experience in everyday life was that everything exists. Okay? Then we come along and we find that everything is empty. And we think, God, nothing exists. But then when we realize pratityasamutpada, emptiness, when we really realize the true meaning of emptiness, we see that when we reflect and understand and understand dependent arising, pratityasamutpada, we realize this middle way that neither existence or non-existence, everything is the middle way of conditioned arising, pratityasamutpada. As a reflection, you could say, in our everyday life, we experience things as existent, and we think everything exists. Then we begin to see things as empty, and we think nothing exists. However, when we reflect and understand dependent arising, pratityasamutpada, we realize the middle way and see everything as neither existent or non-existent. It's neither eternalism or nihilism. Everything is simply a flow of phenomena. Got to get your head around it.
I've heard it described, I think it was Deepak Chopra, and described it as the eyes interpret things, vibrations, and put them into a form so that you can make sense of it. Is that going into what we're talking about? We have sense organs that take the information that's out there and put it into a form that makes sense to us for survival, daily living.
Yeah, yeah.
Does that?
Yeah, yeah.
Is it useful to put that in the context of this?
Yes, it is. Yeah, because, I mean, we... conventional reality is just that. I mean, we observe something and we put a label on it, obviously to function. We have to do that. I mean, a chair is a chair, you know, and a dog's a dog. But they are purely labels. They are simply conventional designations that we put on. We impute, in effect, a self onto every object that we perceive. We give it existence, we give it inherent existence by doing that. You know, we try to make permanent what is essentially transient. It's impermanent. I mean, we go back to the three lectures with this, you know. Everything is the three, you know, impermanence, suffering, and no self. You can bring it all back down to that, too. But that, you're quite right with your idea there, that we impute a self onto something, anything, any object. We do it to function. We couldn't function without it.
I view it more that, I mean, my interpretation is more it's an act of mind that does that imputing. It's not the organ itself, it's the act of mind. As soon as signal, whatever, reaches mind, it's at that point that you... conventionally label it, essentially, make it into something fixed.
Which actually, I mean, in the bigger picture, you know, I'm thinking about it, it does make sense because all these things, you impute them so that you can survive. And the whole aspect of surviving is to an extent, or maybe not to an extent, to a full extent, opposed to the Dharma of what's been taught here, you know, as in, oh, I don't want to die, I want to survive. A car's coming very fast, and it's approaching, it's getting very close, I jump out the way, you know, which is a survival instinct.
Yeah, well, this is conventional reality. In no way should we deny conventional reality. Yeah. It's a conventional truth. There's the two truths, the conventional truth and the ultimate truth. You know, of that. But what we want to realize is the middle way of pratityasamutpada, that everything is just that process of becoming.
We shouldn't regard conventional truth as a lesser truth to a greater ultimate truth. It's not like they're not hierarchical truths.
Yeah.
Ultimately, it's the self that's trying to save the self or preserve the self. You know? But if there is no self, there's nothing to preserve. You know, that's what I'm trying to say.
But you have, you've got a conventional self. I mean, don't deny that you can't say it doesn't, you know. I do not exist.
Still jump out of the way of the car is my advice.
And you hurry along.
It is that difficulty, isn't it? You talk about no ignorance and no extinction of ignorance. And it's what it's pointing to is there's no point at which you can say there's ignorance. You know, there is ignorance extant, standing on its own. Just as there's no point at which you can say there is no ignorance standing extant on its own.
But you can just realise what you said. But I mean, it comes back to the very first statement. Form is emptiness, emptiness is form. You can't have the emptiness without the form. But the form wouldn't be form as we experience it without the emptiness.
And the dhammas are conditions, but conditions are also empty. So therefore, the nidhanas have an effect, but they don't have an inherent existence.
That's right, they don't have an inherent existence.
I'm interested in what you said about the conventional reality not being hierarchical. Say more. If you have any more.
Well, conventional and ultimate reality are two ways of seeing essentially the same thing,
right.
Which is a flow of phenomena, which is the same problem. So I think there's an error in saying conventional reality, well, that's how I see it and that's wrong, actually is to see things as impermanent and insubstantial, what you're still seeing them as being things that are impermanent. So it's not that it's wrong, it's still true, but it's true in a conventional operational sense. An ultimate reality is true in an ultimate sense, but you can't actually operate from an ultimate reality perspective.
I suppose I'm just thinking, though, that I think it's useful to think in terms of the conventional, the sort of consensus reality view as being topsy-turvy.
Mm.
So that sort of does...
That,
well, I think of it as topsy-turvy, therefore we suffer.
Mm.
You know? Okay. So the reason that one of the characteristics of conditioned existence is suffering is because we behave as if things were solid and dependable, you know? Or is it we behave as if certain experiences are abiding, you know? And they're not, and so therefore we suffer. So I suppose I'm saying that about the topsy-turvy thing, because you were saying, well, it's not that one is wrong and one is right. Or maybe that's not what you meant, but...
I don't think conventional reality means the view that things are permanent or real.
Right.
The conventional reality means the perspective that they are substantial, not the fact that they're substantial. The fact that they're substantial is simply a mistake.
Yeah.
So the conventional reality is the reality within which we function by convention that makes it all work. It's not the view that is substantial.
Right.
Or real.
Okay,
right.
Because that's what causes our suffering,
yeah.
That's what causes the sense,
yeah.
Is our inability to realise that
yeah.
They are impermanent.
Yes.
You've got to distinguish between a wrong view and the conventions by which
and conventional experience,
which is a conventional
view.
Yeah.
And it comes back to the two fundamental problems of Buddhism, essentially creating an ignorance, doesn't it? You know, and avidya. I think this is something that sticks in my mind. Remember Sagarmati saying, like, you take the word avidya, and that means enlightened, right? So avidya means you're not enlightened. So you're seeing things from a point of view of an unenlightened person. But you said something quite interesting. It's like when you take a Sanskrit word and you put A in front of it, it doesn't just mean not. It can mean that you take that particular quality and you disguise it. So it's like avidya is like you disguising avidya. You see what I mean? You're disguising enlightenment. You're disguising the world. So avidya is your conventional truth. But avidya is your conventional truth. But avidya is a enlightened state. So we are disguising the world. You know, we're putting... So it's like the Bahya Sutra, where the Buddha says, in the scene, oh, now the scene. you remove the disguise and then you see things as they are. So in a way, reality is staring us in the face, but we are disguising it. You know, and of course that leads to our suffering. You know, in part that disguise is our craving to perpetuate a limited sense of who we are. You know, that's what it
meant. What we're saying that is like, we know all this stuff.
No, you don't really know it. You're stopping yourself from knowing.
Yeah, but we already know it, but we've got all these conditions and these layers that are covering it up.
Mm.
And our job is to get rid of these layers.
Mm. Well, the potentiality for knowing it's there, you take the layers away.
We're actually going to look at this from some of the points of view that we've been discussing. We're going to look at that tomorrow.
Right.
How a bodhisattva operates in the perfection of wisdom, which might be helpful.
Mm.
But I'd be getting ahead of myself if I started talking about it in the middle of this. But essentially, when we... our mistake is trying to make permanent what is essentially transient. It is essentially transient. It's essentially impermanent. Everything is like that. But we want to make everything permanent. That's why we grasp at it. That's why there is suffering. Because we want to make permanent what is impermanent. It's the free actions. But what we're getting at here is that don't take conventional truth as meaning everything ultimately exists. And don't take emptiness as meaning nothing exists.
Mm-hmm.
What we have to see is that it's neither of these two things. It's the middle way of Pratitya-samutpada. If we take conventional truth as being ultimate existence, I mean, we experience its conventional existence, we experience it as being conventionally real, but ultimately, ultimate truth is that it's empty. But if we take emptiness as being nihilism, that nothing exists, then we're equally wrong. So we can't take conventional truth meaning that there is real ultimate existence, that everything substantially exists. And if we take emptiness as meaning that there is nothing exists, when really both come to the same thing as nihilism, there would be no life at all. Nothing could move. Nothing could shift. Nothing could come into existence or go out of existence. It would be, both would be inherently fixed. All there is the middle way between them of conditionality, Pratitya-samutpada. But when you look at it deeply, you see that emptiness is Pratitya-samutpada. So, we've looked at it from one point of view of the Nidanas. We can also look at it, the 24 Nidanas of there is no ignorance, no extinction of ignorance until you come to there's no decay and death, no extinction of decay and death. But then you can go on the reverse direction of it, where it's denying it. So the one is positing it, the other is denying it. If you look at it from the 24 Nidanas. Do you get them? No.
So what you're saying is that this no extension of decay is moving backwards.
You move it backwards, isn't it? As the Buddha did when he... You go from ignorance arises in dependence that way. And then you go back ceasing with the cessation of death. Becoming ceases with the cessation of attachment, the ceasing of becoming attachment ceases, and so forth, going back that way. So you can say there is no ignorance, there's no extinction of ignorance. It's denying both. All there is the middle way of Pratitya-samutpada. That's the way Khonsa interprets there is no ignorance, no extinction of ignorance, and so forth. But I don't think it's as clear for seeing the lead up to it in the previous statements. Well, first of all, saying emptiness is form, and then saying in emptiness there is no form, but then saying there's neither emptiness nor form. Kanza makes a very short statement in this, where he says, item 5, we have the 12 links of the chain of causation, that is, ignorance, formation forces, consciousness, name and form, becoming, birth, decay and death. The traditional formula recites first the order of their production from one another, and therefore, and thereafter, their successive extinction. So all it's that this is saying, there is neither of these. What there is the middle way. There is either their production through dependent, you know, their successive production, nor their cessation. They're both, all that is empty. All there is the middle way. Of Pratitya Samuppada. It's in this, it's the statement is being made in the context of Pratitya Samuppada. That's what I think the sutra is leading up to, rather than what Kunsa is saying. First of all, emptiness is form, and then in emptiness there is no form, and then it's saying, don't look at either emptiness or form. What there is the middle way. Can't take existence or non-existence. All there is the middle way. Form being existence, emptiness being non-existence, there is neither. It's the middle way of Pratitya Samuppada. In taking the Nidanas, there's neither the production nor the cessation. There is just the middle way.
So if we were to, you know, going through these, as you might in a flowchart, you know, from one, between one and two, you draw an arrow and to show the direction it's going in. We're actually, what's important is actually the arrow pointing, you know, between this and this. So it's the going from this to this, and this to this. It's that.
Yeah, ultimately is there's neither existence or non-existence. Don't take conventional as existence, as ultimate, you know, as real existence, or emptiness as complete non-existence. All there is the flow of phenomena, the middle way, everything arising in dependence and condition. Go back to what we looked at yesterday. Take a phenomenon as a condition, in dependence in which a phenomenon arises, and the instant that phenomenon arises, it's a condition. In dependence in which a phenomenon arises, in dependence in which a phenomenon arises, there is never an instant of abiding. It is just a flow. There is neither ultimate existence or ultimate non-existence. Everything is a flow. There's nothing that you can grasp and hold on to. That's a big mistake. We will want to make something permanent. We want to make permanent what is inherently, well, not inherently, but it's essentially transient, impermanent. That's the whole cause of suffering.
Cause of our suffering is not understanding the middle way or not putting it into practice. So it's like the wheel itself is us not practicing the middle way. So that's why we're bound to it, isn't it? So therefore, how do you liberate yourself from that? Well, you're only liberated from it by the 12 postures in the dance, which is the middle way. You know? So you're just introducing the middle way, superimposing it onto the 12 negative Nidanas, and that causes you to be liberated from it. But otherwise, how could you make the realization of the cessation of each one unless you were practicing middle way? You wouldn't be able to do it.
Well, I mean, just go back to the definition of phenomenon itself.
Yes,
the appearance which anything makes to our consciousness as distinguished from what it is in itself. Or Kunz's view of emptiness. Something that appears to be something much, but which is nothing. Emptiness is something that looks like something much, but is nothing.
Could you read out the other one, that one that you read out just before the phenomenal one?
Or the, just look up the dictionary for that
right.
one.
Oh, that's just from the Greek phrase, that one.
Well, look up Chambers Dictionary, and actually
cool.
it, it's any, a phenomenon is anything directly apprehended by the senses, or an event that may be observed, and then the appearance which anything makes to our consciousness as distinguished from what it is itself. Actually, that definition of a phenomenon is pretty close to what we've been discussing today. How we view conventional reality. Then we go on to the next part. There is no suffering, no origination, no stopping, no part. So as you know, the Four Noble Truths are a formulation of Pratitya Samutpada, dependent arising. There's suffering, the cause of suffering, the cessation of suffering, and the way to the cessation. And the sutras just make it clear that the Four Noble Truths, which are fundamental Buddhist doctrine, are not exempt from the designation empty. They're only conventionally real, conventionally existent. Like all phenomena, they are the middle way, like they are a formulation of the middle way. Then it goes on to say, there is no cognition, no attainment, no non-attainment. This is quite an interesting one, actually, because here, cognition should be understood as a true perception of how things really are. But actually, there is no true perception, because every perception distorts how things really are. Now just think of the definition of a phenomenon and you've got that exact. In other words, we have a perception or a cognition, an understanding, whatever you want to make it, but we impute a self on it right away as soon as we put a label on it. We give it permanence. So we're actually clouding how it really is. We're obscuring it, its true nature. As soon as we put a designation onto it, to any idea, any cognition, any perception, then it isn't a true cognition then, true understanding of what it really is.
So is the case of the awakened mind such that cognition is true perception, or that there is a clear awareness of the extent to which cognition is not true perception?
Say that again.
Well, the statement was cognition in the sense of true perception, but there is no true perception.
Yeah.
So does the awakened mind have true perception, or is the awakened mind simply aware to the extent with which the perception is not true?
Well, the awakened mind sees things as they really are. It sees them without any thought coverings. It sees them with pure awareness, with naked awareness, as they really are. It's in the seeing only the seen.
So would that constitute true perception?
That would be a true perception. That would be a true perception. The awakened mind, it would be a true perception. And there is no attainment, no non-attainment. So there's neither attainment nor non-attainment. There's only the middle way of Pratitya-Samutpada. But the way to realization is actually through non-attainment.
Oh,
in the Bhante's survey of Buddhism, I think it's in chapter 3, I'm not sure, he makes quite a very important statement, I think, that is very seldom talked about in the order or anywhere. He said, the means by which, without there being any gaining, that which is not to be gained is gained by way of no gaining. The means by which, without there being any gaining, that which is not to be gained is gained by way of no gaining. It's by realizing that there's no thing fatuity or to gain. And practicing that, no gaining or no attaining, that you get realization.
How to do that without becoming nihilistic? Say, no, let's go down the pub.
No, it isn't really. Yeah. I think that's, I think Andy's statement is perfectly clear from what the Heart Sutra is saying.
It's moving against that striving, isn't it? That striving and that
grasping.
So there's a grasping for something, and then the belief, the other belief that comes with grasping. Once I have that thing within my grasp, that thing, I will have it, firstly. And secondly, that will materially affect my sense of myself. So they're trying to reach out and attach something to an ego that neither exists nor that the strive. You know. So it's that process that
is
undermining.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's a statement actually you can break down to a certain extent. Mm. The means by which without to be gained, that which is not to be gained. Well, I mean, enlightenment isn't to be gained. It's not a thing. You can only gain a thing. If you start reifying, then you're changing the whole idea. But that which is not to be gained is gained by way of no gaining, by realization of there is no substantial thing to be gained, be it enlightenment or anything else.
Sort of implicit in that as well is the fact that you're undoing or you're softening the self, isn't it? Because if you are working on that fetter of self-view, if that's softening and unraveling, then there isn't any base for which your gains to plug into.
That's right.
There, so.
That's us again. Another day.
Another
day. Tomorrow should see us completing the Heart Sutra. We'll be looking at it from the sort of practice view of a bodhisattva tomorrow. Goes on to that, or how we should practice it too. And the suggested reflection today is to think of neither existence and non-existence. You know, first of all, we experience things as existing, everything exists, and then when we think about emptiness, that nothing exists. But then realization that everything is the middle way of Pratitya Samutpada. Neither existence or non-existence.